Okay, thanks, Ken. And now welcome everybody to the Results Global Poverty webinar for June 2017. And I want to say a special welcome to those of you who are joining us for the first time. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Joanne Carter, the Executive Director of Results and Results Ed Fund, and I'm talking to you today from the Results Office in Washington, D.C. It's great to be on by webinar and phone with folks virtually, and I really look forward to seeing many of you in person in Washington, D.C. in just exactly 6 weeks from now. I'm really excited about the campaign that we're kicking off this month, and this campaign that's going to be a main focus for the second half of this year to ensure strong U.S. support for the Global Partnership for Education so that we can ensure that all kids, including the poorest kids in the poorest communities, can have a quality education. And as you're going to hear more about in a few moments from our wonderful guest, the Global Partnership for Education is the only organization of its kind exclusively dedicated to education in the world's lowest income and most fragile countries. This is a huge opportunity to build support for the Global Partnership for Education, but also for us to build really needed and powerful U.S. leadership and new champions in Congress for education for every kid. So we're going to have a shorter than usual call today so that you will have time to do letter writing after the call in your meetings. And also, I hope, time to strategize how you can get even more letters and more support in the next weeks in support of this campaign that we're kicking off today. And I'll come back in a moment as to why those letters that you can get written can be a really powerful tool to support both our outreach and this advocacy campaign. Again, we're going to have a great guest, so I don't want to say a whole lot, but we know that education is absolutely key to breaking the intergenerational cycle of poverty, and it is the driver of almost every positive change we seek to achieve. And one of the areas that has, you know, struck me repeatedly, because I spend a lot of time with global health leaders and folks that work on the AIDS epidemic and ministers of health, you know, and one of the biggest challenges that we face in the AIDS epidemic is the really high rates of HIV infection we see in adolescent girls because of both their physical vulnerability, but also their social and economic vulnerability. You know, and literally virtually everyone working on these issues now, ministers of health, AIDS leaders, and others, have come to focus on girls' education because it has become clear that the single biggest, most important thing we can do to protect adolescent girls from becoming HIV infected is keeping them in school. And that is just one of many examples of the, you know, huge impact of education and of giving agency to young girls so that they can help determine their futures and stay in school. And ensuring U.S. support for the Global Partnership for Education is the most strategic thing we can do to advance this effort. And again, you'll hear more in a moment, but there will be a key time later this year when donor countries come together to make pledges for the Global Partnership for Education, and we need the U.S. to do its part. And we know that right now we're faced with an administration that wanted to zero out support for international education. So our work with Congress and our work with Congress and the media to influence the administration has never been more critical. And building the base of support in our communities for this campaign and for showing the support in Washington, D.C. at the Results International Conference, those are going to be two key ways that we can build congressional leadership. Many of you have done amazing outreach, you know, since the beginning of the year, and I think this campaign on education is a fantastic opportunity to engage new people and new groups, you know, either folks that you've already connected with or folks that you can engage starting now in your community, so that we build that broader network of supporters. Because if we can get dozens of people to write letters to your members of Congress, it engages people, and it is actually a powerful tool, a powerful way to show the breadth of support for U.S. investment in the Global Partnership for Education, because we know that personal letters from constituents are influential to members of Congress. And one of the exciting strategies we have is having these letters hand-delivered by those of you in your groups that are coming to Washington for the international conference. You know, and if you happen to have a district meeting with your member of Congress even before that, you know, great, you can do that as well. And then I just want to say a word about the International Conference. You know, we will have amazing, inspiring speakers, including about the Global Partnership for Education and why education matters so much. We're going to have the founder of the largest and maybe most effective anti-poverty development organization in the world, Sir Fazel Abed from BRAC in Bangladesh, World Bank President Jim Kim, journalists, powerful, smart organizers, I think maybe more workshops than we've ever had before, and partners from across the US and 20 countries. But really the most important thing this year, I think, for the International Conference is to have the most powerful presence we can on Capitol Hill, because we need that to shape congressional priorities more than ever and help them hold firm to protect and also continue to be ambitious about effective investments and policies to end poverty like education. So I want to say, be gathering those letters, but also please keep inviting folks to the International Conference. You know, and if you personally are considering coming but you're not sure, talk to your partners, talk to our grassroots team. We really want you to join us in DC, and we really need you more than ever. To help create a little bit of an incentive and encourage you to register sooner, we have also launched a flash sale. So we're gonna have $50 off the conference registration between now and Thursday. So it's a little bit of an incentive for those that are undecided, but also if you can let us know sooner, then we can plan for your presence and for making this the biggest and most powerful conference we've ever had. So now it's my great pleasure to introduce our special guest, who as an education leader and expert on all things about the Global Partnership for Education, Sarah Beardmore. Sarah is now the Senior Strategy and Policy Specialist at the Global Partnership for Education. She's an incredible technical expert on these issues, but also a deeply dedicated and hugely effective advocate. She's had over a decade of experience on international advocacy and human rights and education and other development issues. And I had the really good fortune of working really closely with Sarah when she was our Education for All manager at Results. So I know that many of you do know her from that work. She supported our grassroots in advocacy to both increase funding for basic education, but also to increase the impact of our investments. And I would say she really built our results leadership role on education here in the US space, but also with our international partners. So Sarah, a big welcome to you. It's great to have you back. And if you could give us, as we launch into this campaign, a little bit of your perspective on why education matters, especially now with some of the challenges the world faces, the key role of the Global Partnership, and what a successful replenishment, you know, funding moment for GPE could mean for the poorest and most vulnerable kids in the world.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for such a generous introduction, Joanne. And it's an absolute pleasure for me to be with the Results family again. I have yet to work with a more effective grassroots lobbying organization. And I know that the power of the grassroots can have a huge impact. And indeed, since the last replenishment, because of Results grassroots getting out and campaigning in all of our donor countries, GPE's resources have increased and our disbursements are double what they were when I first joined GPE. So that's a real testament to the impact of the work that you're doing. So I want to talk a little bit about GPE and indeed why now. I mean, Joanne poses a really good question, which is what is the role of education in the world today? And I think that we have more evidence than ever before that education is absolutely foundational for development. And it is linked to progress in every single sustainable development goal that's been adopted. It's a foundation for economic prosperity. It improves peace and stability. As Joanne mentioned, it's basically a social vaccine against HIV/AIDS and other diseases. And recent research has also shown that educating girls and family planning is actually one of the top five things we can do to reduce carbon emissions and slow climate change. So across the board, when we look at issues from migration to security and conflict to climate change, we see that education is absolutely essential. And in fact, progress in these areas is not possible unless we seriously invest across the board in education. Now, despite all of this evidence, education has seriously lagged as a donor priority, as a priority for countries, and we're now at a turning point where we have the opportunity to really change that. In fact, we need to, because 263 million girls and boys are not going to school, and many more are not learning. They're in school, but they don't have textbooks, their teachers are not paid well, and lack training, and so we have generations of children that are actually leaving school without the skills to build a future, to gain livelihoods, to contribute to their communities. So there really is a global learning crisis. And as we see the number of young people increasing with the demographic boom in many countries, we see there's a huge loss dividend from the talent and skills of all of these young people. So we're really at a point where we don't have a choice. We have to invest in young people, and the future of the planet really quite literally depends on it. So that brings me to what GPE's role is. And so as a partnership, GPE brings together all of the major donor countries. It brings together currently 67 different developing country partners. And we unite behind a vision to ensure inclusive and equitable quality education for all. And that really leads us to the mission of mobilizing all of the efforts around the world to the achievement of this. And we do so through this inclusive partnership. And we focus on really building national education systems for the long term, sustainably. GPE has three main goals: to improve learning outcomes, to increase equity, gender equality, and inclusion, and to build education systems. And at the country level, what that looks like is that we actually invest in stronger education sector planning so that there is a clear strategy that all partners can get behind to harmonize their efforts. And then we support inclusive policy dialogue. So it's not enough for one donor to sit down with one Ministry of Education. We actually want all of the development partners and civil society, really critically, including teachers associations and others, to be at the same table and to be able to monitor jointly what the progress is and be able to hold each other accountable for goals in education.
Hey Sarah, can you, this is great, can you speak even a little bit louder? Some folks are, depending if they have a room full of folks, are having a hard time hearing you.
I can certainly try.
That's fantastic. Actually, if you don't mind holding the mic, that's great. Exactly. Thank you.
Okay. And then just really briefly, at the global level, GPE's main role is really to mobilize more and better financing. So we look to raise money through the GPE pooled fund, but we also try to encourage our donor partners to increase their bilateral aid to countries, and for countries themselves, actually, to increase their investments up to at least 20% of their national budgets. And so doing that, we've actually seen really good progress, much faster rates of growth in national education budgets from countries that have joined the GPE. Right now, 89 countries are eligible for GPE support. And in these countries, there are 870 million school-aged children. So by building strong education systems in all of these countries, we have the opportunity to impact nearly a billion young people. These countries are also home to 78% of the world's out-of-school children. So GPE is really focusing on countries that are the most vulnerable, that have the highest levels of educational poverty, and where crisis and conflict continue to deny children the right to education. So we're really the only partnership out there in education focused on the world's poorest, children that are the most marginalized. And at the global level, we actually bring together all of the major players in education. So we are one of the largest convening agencies of education talent in the world. Literally, all the major expertise in education sits on our board, including your own results colleague, Tony Baker, who's our current board representative for civil society from the North. And all of these partners work both globally at the board level and also at the country level to make sure that we have stronger sector planning, inclusive policy dialogue, and financing that's really looking towards clear results for children. And GPE's advocacy, its ability to kind of broker knowledge and innovation, the way that it coordinates all of its international partners and mobilizes financing is really what is unique about the GPE model. So as we look towards the next 3 years, we have a new financing and funding framework that actually will allow GPE to go above and beyond what it's ever done before. And what we have in addition to our GPE fund that provides critical grant financing to countries is also a pooled fund for advocacy and accountability so that we can actually invest in civil society in country to do social accountability, to be at the policy table and be able to influence their government's policies. We also have a pooled fund set up for knowledge and innovation. And so this grant mechanism will allow us to support critical global goods in education, including in education data, and helping find innovations that work and really take them to scale when we find solutions that are effective. And this complements our investments already in sector planning. So basically we invest in research and evidence, and we also invest through a leverage fund to kind of incentivize co-financing from countries. So all of that together is kind of the GPE offer. And through all of these different grant windows, we actually are tackling all of the key drivers of strong education systems. And through a year and a half of really studied work, we developed this proposal because we know that that's actually what it's going to take for us to achieve our vision and mission. So when we look at what kind of financing we're going to need between now and 2020, we've calculated that we need about $3.1 billion from donors in grant funding to be able to support 89 countries around the world. And that includes another $900 million that we think we can actually incentivize by having this leverage fund that sort of requires co-financing from countries. So we expect not only the donors to step up, but also developing country partners to put their money on the table. And by raising $4 billion over the next 3 years, we want to bring GPE to a level where every year it's disbursing $2 billion to support education in its partner countries. And we have a goal that by 2030, we're actually up to $4 billion annually. And we know that actually the lowest income countries are going to continue to need grant financing, and that this role is going to be absolutely fundamental to achieving the SDG in education. So with that in mind, we think that now is actually a critical moment. We're standing at the precipice of being able to support an additional 19 million children completing primary school, including 9.4 million girls, and almost 11 million of those children are going to be living in countries affected by fragility or conflict. I'll give an example of this. Right now, GPE is helping support the local education group in Yemen. The local education group is absolutely critical because the conflict that began in 2015 has actually led to many donors suspending their operations in Yemen and many schools actually being closed. So I think over 2,000 schools have closed. Many are actually open only a few hours a day. But by supporting the local education group in Yemen, GPE has actually allowed the country's education sector and donors to stay engaged long enough to develop a 3-year transition plan that will allow Yemen to actually keep schools operating despite the conflict. And with GPE's funding being flexibly reprogrammed, we're going to be able to start supporting teacher pay, for example. Like, teachers haven't been paid in 6 months in Yemen. They're going to be leaving schools just to try and support themselves. But GPE's work with the local education group there and our funding, $76 million, is going to enable those children to even get the education that they're getting now, despite the risk of famine, despite the fact that the country is facing serious security issues and increasing violence. So that's the kind of work that GPE is able to do. And that's, when I say 19 million children completing primary school, they're children in Sana'a who are barely able to go to school because their teachers won't be paid. So that just gives you a bit of a face to the numbers in front of you. In addition, GPE thinks that obviously primary school is not enough. None of you would take your kids out of school once they finish primary. So we want to make sure that kids are at least able to get into lower secondary and complete them. And in most of our countries, that's still far out of reach. The lower secondary completion rates are, you know, in the 20 percentile, 40 percentile, they're still really low. So we want to see another 6.6 million children completing lower secondary school. In addition, GPE's funding, and this is approximate because countries decide what they'll invest in, but about almost 2 million teachers could be trained. We could build another almost 24,000 classrooms, and we could distribute another 200 million textbooks. So that's sort of the scale of financing that GPE is trying to achieve. Now, the moment for education is really, I think, come, because we now have a huge amount of media and press. I mean, in May alone, there were 600 print and online articles. And I think this is really striking, because in the 2010s, we saw that actually education was so far off the radar, and it's now being recognized by the UN Secretary General, by many others, as critical. And so we're starting to see a kind of increasing momentum, including through the Education Commission, which is a financing commission chaired by the former Prime Minister of the UK, that actually called for a huge increase in financing to meet the financing gaps in low and middle income countries. So we're at a brilliant moment to capitalize on this increased political will. GPE has a number of champions in place, including the president of Senegal, Malala, who openly called on Canada to host the GPE replenishment, and Rihanna, who recently did a trip to Malawi with our board chair, Julia Gillard. So there's a lot of really exciting momentum out there, and it's actually a great moment for us to be working with all of our civil society partners on this advocacy campaign. This really has the potential to not just completely transform education, but to transform our development vision for the future across every sector and every development challenge we face. So with that in mind, happy to take questions, and just really excited to be able to support you all in the work that you'll be doing throughout this campaign, particularly in the US, where we're gonna need some really strong and powerful voices. So thanks, Joanne.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. That was a fantastic run through of the potential. And so we have a few minutes for questions. You can either post a question in the chat box, or I think, Ken, you are going to unmute folks, and then you just have to unmute yourself. You'll open up the lines and say your name and city, and we have time for just we'll take a few questions, and then Sarah can respond to several. So in the chat box, or feel free to yell out your name and city and ask a question.
Your lines are unmuted, so you can click on your buttons here and unmute, or if you're on the phone, hit star one.
Or again, if it's easier, you can post a question in the chat window.
Linda Schatz in Tampa.
Go ahead, Linda.
Maybe Sarah, this isn't particularly for you, but I'd like to know what happened to the READ Act in the Senate this week.
We'll come back to that in a minute before I turn the call over to Ken. I'll give you guys an update for sure.
Hi, Amy from New York.
Yeah, go ahead, Amy.
Hey, Joe. I noticed the heading pivoting to global education. Are we kind of putting some of the other global issues on the back burner for Lobby Day this year and just focusing on education, or are we still doing all of the above?
You know, Ken and John can answer better, but I think we're going to have a big focus on our campaign on Global Partnership for Education, but we will be continuing our, certainly depending on where the process is, continuing our appropriations work. And I'll say in a moment, those things really link to each other. I mean, certainly on the education piece, but we'll continue to push that as well. So it's a pivot and a key focus, but we won't, we'll continue also some strategic kind of focused work on appropriations.
Okay, thank you.
Ken Schatz in Tampa.
Yeah, Ken, go ahead.
Sarah, when I grow up, I want to be like you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Lynn in Moreno Valley, California.
Go ahead, Lynn.
So my question is, what exactly would we want these letters from constituents to say? Like, what is our request of the public in support of the GPE? What are we asking our friends and neighbors? What is the message you'd love to see us put out there in letters to the editor? Can you synthesize it into something that would be a quick, easy ask for the public?
This is Ken. I'll just jump in real quick here. I mean, the June action sheet has a request, a specific request in it. So I would go to the June action sheet. Our requests will get more specific over time as well.
And it's really an opportunity to build congressional support for the GPE, because we're going to need Congress to weigh in with the administration as well as take actions that they can around that. I'm seeing a couple of questions. So can you can also help me. I'm seeing a couple of questions in the chat window. So Sarah, I'll ask a couple that you can maybe answer. One is, can you tell us about an example of a country that's had stellar success in educational improvements, you know, supported by the GPE? So maybe one good example. Anything you would say about good ways to make the case for investing in GPE when people's reflex may be to say, let's invest at home first. And then we can say more about, there was another question about the Trump administration making what it's going to take to have them make a pledge. You know, I think that's going to be political support from the media and from Congress to make those happen. But maybe a couple of those questions, Sarah.
Sure. Thanks, Joanne. And I've seen there's a number of really excellent questions in the chat box. So I'll try and answer as many of them as I can. I think first, just to name a couple of countries that come to mind in terms of success. Ethiopia is certainly a country that has received a huge amount of funding from GPE, but it also has a very strong government. And there you see access to education at the primary level has gone up to almost universal. They still have major challenges, though, in lower secondary. So they're facing those challenges. And of course, learning outcomes have also not been great. So, I mean, there's a success story when it comes to primary school access, with obviously some steps to go. I think in Vietnam, that's a country, again, just where the national leadership has been really phenomenal. And so with GPE support, Vietnam has been able to do a huge amount. Including expanding pre-primary education, which is something that is even more critical. So I would say that those are two countries, but if you go to our website, we have country profiles, and so you're welcome to just look through all of the statistics and data there if you want to find some examples to use. And we also have regular blogs on some of our country work, and so depending on the challenge a country is facing, we may have a success story, for example, in supporting education to be maintained despite the Ebola crisis in West Africa. It's not a huge success story in terms of major outcomes across the board in all learning areas, but it's certainly an example of the kinds of things that GPE has done successfully. There was another question about investing at home first, and this is a perennial question. Why should we invest in aid? Why should we invest in education abroad? And I think some of the answers, number one, go to the fact that we are in an interconnected global world, and our economic prosperity is bound to the economic prosperity of our partners. And so investing in education around the world means that we'll have to spend less on defense, we'll have to spend less in supporting other issues that end up coming up in terms of health epidemics, and that ultimately it actually helps people at home in the U.S. to invest in education around the world. We want to live in a peaceful world, and that's actually the way to do it. I think also there's a number of arguments around the fact that this funding is a drop in the bucket. And so we could spend 10 times more here at home, and we are. But when it comes to aid, it's like less than, you know, 0.5% of the US GDP, and just investing a small amount of that would have a huge, huge return. But I'm sure actually that our results folks have even better arguments than that. So I would welcome others to jump in. And then there were just two other quick questions I noticed. I haven't been able to follow all of the ones in the chat group, but there was a question just about the scale of aid overall. The majority of funding comes from national governments. And even in the poorest countries, which have the lowest GDP and people are living in dire poverty, they're still covering at least 70% of the education costs, even aid-dependent countries. And out of the $102 billion that they've estimated is the gap in low-income countries, about $32 billion would be in aid. That's the gap. There was another question about the evidence around climate change and girls' education. And I would just refer you to a recently released book called Drawdown that actually looked at every single possible climate change solution. And they examined girls' education and they rank them all. And that's where you can find more data on that.
Yeah. No, that's great, Sarah. And that's by Paul Hawken. Yeah, really interesting that just came out. Sarah, thank you. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. And I think the slides will be incredibly valuable. And I know that we will be working with you on a, you know, if not daily, weekly basis, and maybe even bring you back again. One of your colleagues is also going to be at the international conference speaking on a panel about GP. But thanks so much for your leadership on this and your partnership and supporting us to be really ready and effective to drive this campaign. So thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you, Joanne. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And I only wish we had even more time.
Yes, always. But thanks,
but
everyone.
Thank you. You've been a great partner. Back to Linda's question. Can you bring up the next slide just about, key actions. So two really important Senate actions that are opportunities for action on our education work. First, on the READ Act, the Reinforcing Education Accountability and Development. Again, for those of you that are not familiar with it, a bill that will put into law a strong foundation for U.S. global education efforts, including strong support for the Global Partnership for Education. Again, the READ Act miraculously passed the full House with thanks to all of the work that you guys had done for many years and months, but it passed the full House just after the inauguration. And this last week, it began moving through the Senate processes to bring it to the floor. And we are still hearing, we're hopeful that the bill will move ahead to the Senate floor for a voice vote early this next week. So I know many of you have been already calling your Senate offices, but it's really more important than ever for your senators to hear from you. So please do make sure you call your senators early this week and urge them to vote yes on the READ Act. And we will keep you posted daily as to what we're hearing about when the bill will go to the Senate floor. And you see the action that you can connect to there. And we also now, if you were in the call before it started, Ken mentioned, we now, which is great, have a bipartisan Senate basic education sign-on letter to the key decision makers on the Appropriations Subcommittee in support of basic education funding for next year. It's led by Senators Isaacson of Georgia and Senator Feinstein of California. We just heard about this. It's been in the works, but we just heard about it end of day on Friday, and it is only open until this Wednesday, the 14th, so a very short window. So it means we really need everyone to also be asking your senators to sign on as soon as possible, since we have such limited time. And again, it is the only appropriations sign-on letter that's still out there, so please call your senators early this week on both key actions, vote yes on the READ Act when it comes to the floor, and then also sign the Isaacson-Feinstein basic education letter. Thanks for your support. And both of those things are not only important, you know, right now, but they will be really a foundation for our efforts on GPE and our efforts on basic education going forward. Very last thing I have to share is that we have an amazing opportunity to build our base of monthly donors to Results and Results Educational Fund. And for the month of June only, we have an incredibly generous longtime donor and volunteer who has offered that for every new monthly donor that we get to Results or Results Educational Fund, that will unlock a $1,000 match up to $25,000. And the reason it matters so much is that monthly donors are absolutely critical to us having an assured base of flexible funding to do all the kind of advocacy work we need to do. So if you have been considering being a monthly donor to Results, now's the time to do it. If you can bring in new monthly donors to Results, we hope to have at least 25 new monthly donors this month so we can fully unlock this incredibly generous match. The gifts can be made by credit card or checking account, and you can either get that on the front page of the website, or if you go to the donation section, there's a, in the drop down, there is a, you'll see where you can click monthly. And that will unlock an incredibly generous $25,000 and bring us sustainable financing. So thanks for all that you're doing, and make those calls to the Senate, and let's unlock that $25,000 match. And please, please, I hope to see many of you in just 6 weeks at the International Conference. So Ken, I'll turn it over to you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joanne. And happy Saturday, everybody. It is June. It's hard to believe it's June. In terms of Sarah's conversation there, or Sarah's comments, I mean, we are pivoting to education now, as you can see, and we've got a lot to do right now with the actions Joanne mentioned, and then also really gearing up for the replenishment, which is going to be for the next 6 months. We're going to be really focusing a lot on GPE. We'll continue our appropriations work, but again, we're going to be doing a lot of work on education for the balance of this year. So Sarah's comments really, I think, created a great context for us to also prepare for one of the best opportunities we have for face-to-face encounters with our elected officials at the same time, lots of them, and that's the Results International Conference. And again, the dates for that are July 22nd through 25th. And in today's agenda that I sent out to the group leaders, the regional coordinators, and the listserv, I included a link to the International Conference checklist. And if you look at that checklist, among those items is gathering handwritten letters from constituents to carry with you to the International Conference to present to your members of Congress and their staff in person. Writing letters like this has really been one of the staples of Results over time through our education and action meetings. And it is for good reason, because personal letters, and they're just great influencers. As you can see, according to the Congressional Management Foundation, personalized letters are very influential. It's a very influential tactic. And if you look at this, it's number four here on the chart that I'm throwing up there. So the individualized letters are really, really important. But some of us have kind of gotten out of practice of engaging other people in writing letters, and perhaps even out of practice ourselves. So today we want to encourage you to get back in touch with the practice of using the June action sheet on the Global Partnership for Education to write letters. And I would say that even if it's just your group in the room today, write letters just together. Do this as a group. And this is a great practice to get in as a group. But then also discuss who else you can engage in writing those letters, so that you have a solid stack to carry with you into Washington.
Good idea.
Your lines here. Into Washington with you to deliver, or if you're not going to be in DC, to actually send with someone else, or send to us so that we can hand deliver those, maybe with having you on the telephone or something. So why is this important? Again, as you can see, it's tactically a really important and influential action to take. The other thing is that taking action really inspires people. And letters are really a powerful action that requires people also to step outside their comfort zones. People are not used to writing letters like this, and we're interested in having people stretch. And a lot of people are more interested in stretching if they know it's going to make a difference. And so having them write letters will inspire them, particularly if we can get back to them and let them know how we've used those letters. And then also the writing letters is a great way to build your pyramid, your action network, the lower part of your pyramid, and as people become more inspired, then those people are going to move up into your group as well. So this is a great pyramid building activity to put people in regular action writing letters. And then the other thing is that we hear regularly from groups and members of Congress that the letters really do matter, and that they bolster our in-person work that we're doing by demonstrating that there's really a broader base of constituent support in the community that also cares about these issues. So what I want to do right now, I want to just open the lines up a little bit, and I want to see if there are folks have answers to a couple of questions. Either of these questions you can answer, just to hear from a few of you on the line. So share with us a little bit about how letter writing has inspired you, how writing a letter may have inspired you or someone else that you know, or tell us about a time when the letters have influenced a congressional relationship or elicited a response from a congressional office. So I've allowed you to unmute your lines, but let's hear from a few folks about, you know, how letter writing has inspired you or someone else, or how it has influenced a congressional office or elicited a response.
This is John Hornby in Washington State. And I recall a time not too long ago
when our group gathered a number of handwritten letters to get our senator to agree to sign on to one of the letters circulating, I took it to a local office in near us for the senator, and the aide said, oh, we don't usually do this, but I can fax all of these to the aide who is involved in this. And the wonderful thing is, within 2 days, she signed that sign-on letter. And I have to think that those handwritten faxed letters made all the difference.
Fantastic. That's a great example, John. That's really a great example. And then when you tell people what happened because of that, it's like, wow, I guess it was really, it did make a difference to write those letters. That's fantastic. So anybody else on the line want to share?
Yeah, this is Gail from Marin County.
Yeah, go ahead, Gail.
Yeah, I remember a long time ago, way before the internet, when we gathered and we wrote letters and carried them to Senator Burton's office. And she didn't know anything about results at the time. And before she was finished, and she said she didn't usually get this many letters handwritten. So she, one, knew about results, and two, supported what we asked for. And it was very exciting to me because I was a brand new person in results.
That's fantastic. That's a great story, Gail, and a great anecdote about why these things really matter. They learn more about us, but then they also see the constituents really care, and it does propel them into action. Here's something from St. Louis here. It says, one of our newest advocates in Iowa wrote her first letter to her senator. That was their group had been targeting their senator. She had a really powerful personal story, and her senator's office actually called her up after they got her letter to hear more about her story. It was pretty cool. It was her first letter to a senator. The senator still hasn't taken action yet, but we believe she is closer than she has been before. So fantastic. Again, another great example of how these letters can elicit a direct response. Did somebody else have a quick share?
This is Heidi in Albuquerque.
Go ahead, Heidi.
We this is, goes back a long time too. We had a Senator Bingaman, and I remember that we had been trying to get an in-person meeting with him for over 2 years, and I, you know, it's so at that time it was kind of a rocky relationship. He wasn't really giving us our due, but we were able to get a meeting with him, and then our relationship with him over the years transformed so much so that when I met one time with his the chief of staff, I guess, I don't know what her position was exactly, in D.C., she said to me, anytime you need to get a letter to the senator, we send a pouch every single day, just give it to me and I will make sure he gets it. So they were kind of transformed, and it was really cool to think that we had a direct line to our senator.
That's fantastic. Again, that's an excellent, excellent story. So these things really do matter, folks. Thanks for that, Heidi, and it's nice to hear your voice. So I'm going to go ahead and move along here. I apologize if I just cut somebody off. I just muted all the lines. So two apologies. Put it in the chat window though, in any case. But I just want to point out that there are story after story about how these letters do make a difference. And so let me see if I can find my thing here. So we actually are encouraging folks. We're going to create a little bit of an international conference challenge to bring hand-delivered letters to Washington here. And we're going to try to figure out some way to award people some either medals or some sort of metal likenesses of some sort. You know, copper at 10 letters and bronze at 25 letters, silver award 50 letters, and gold award for 100 letters. Again, to be able to maybe walk away with some of the kinds of stories you just heard today about people bringing letters to the international conference. So again, a little friendly competition here. Work with your group, and then, you know, figure out who else you're going to get to write letters. And then people who are writing the letters, again, it makes a huge difference for them when they realize that these things, my letter and what I do does really matter. That's when they start to realize that their voice makes a difference. So putting them in action, regularly writing letters is a great thing. And let's make it big for the IC. So last couple of things here is We've got the international conference checklist there. Again, I just wanted to show you where you could find that if you go to the resources link up in our website there, and then look under group and results conference resources, you'll find the international conference checklist. And again, this is time to be, you know, requesting face-to-face meetings with your members of Congress. And so you want to go ahead and do that. And as Joanne mentioned, that we've got this flash sale here. There's the code there, flash R vol. If somebody's registering now, they'll get $50 off at the conference. I also want to let you know about a couple of intensive conference workshops that are going on Saturday morning, July 22nd from 8:30 to noon, an advocacy skill training workshop where you will learn to train others to become advocates, and you will learn how to deliver the advocacy skill training. And then Wednesday, actually like the day after the lobby day, from 12 to noon, an op-ed writing workshop where we're going to really help you get published. And if you want to be a participant in either of those workshops right now, you can email me directly at kpatterson@results.org, or you can put IC workshop in your subject line, or there's going to be a form in the weekly update this week that you can sign up for that as well. And then finally, last thing or two here is that just, you know, if you haven't done your group planning for the balance of the year with your group, go ahead and do that. So far, we got about 16 plans in out of 80. So I know folks are trying to find their times to do this, but find a time, go online, use our online form. It's very easy to fill out your group plan and let us know who's covering members of Congress and then what your plans are for the balance of the year. And then finally, do just let us know of your report, your activity outreach, your lobby outreach, and your media pieces. I want to be able to report back kind of where we are by the end of May, since we had such a stellar beginning of the year with the first 100 days campaign. I really would like to keep the momentum rolling and be able to update you regularly on how we're doing in those three areas. So I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Lisa Marshall right now. She's going to send us off to our letter writing. Lisa, you handy?
I am. Can you see me?
Yeah, you look great, Lisa.
Great. Well, thanks all for being on. It was really fun to be reunited with our friend Sarah, who's doing such great work with GPE. So a charge to you now to stick around with your groups, write your letters so that you can bring them to the international conference. And if you'd like to, we'd love to see photos of you in action writing your letters. Post them on our Results Volunteers Facebook page. It would be really fun to see. And remember to put in the chat box or to email to me how many are in your room for your meeting. And so now I'll ask Ken to unmute all the lines. And before you go off to write letters and take photos of y'all writing letters, Ken, if you'd unmute the lines, you could say happy June to everybody. Thanks for being on today.
Happy June.
Happy June, everybody. Bye. Bye, Lisa. Bye, bye, Ken. Bye, Joanne.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
I want the four advocates and two advocates.
I'm Roger and Mary.
It was longer than they advertised.
I can't really get out.
No, you can.
Oh. Right. If you're still out there, see you next month.
Happy June. Jill Perry, greetings from Nashville.
Do you know if he's fine?
I don't know.
Right. So
we can't get out of the fuse.
You never leave fuse, Ken.
Nice
and
hot. Nice and
cool. Up in the upper right-hand corner, click exit.
I clicked exit, but fuse is still
Ken's
up.
He's talking to you.
Like an IT call, right?
It's not exiting for you. You can actually just exit the fuse as well.
You want to exit?
For sure. Go under fuse and hit quit application, or you can close your browser.
Safari. Even that didn't help. Fuse is still open.
We can still do,
double click it. Or click up on, there you go, exit meeting.
Done. I got it.